Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Met Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
Alright, thank you DJ Q for bringing us back from the break-in style. He is absolutely right. I am Jay Flemma and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We're here with my fellow GNN correspondent, Tony Deer, our expert on all things Europe and on the PGA Tour. Hey Tony, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Jay.
All right, it's time for the JB's Best Hot Sauce Trivia Question, which everybody knows we gave away a T-shirt that says I'm a hottie and a bottle of JB's Best if our guest guesses the trivia question right. However, because Tony writes for GNN, he counts his friends and family, so even if he gets the question right, he can't win the prize. Sorry, but that would be cheating, Tony.
Yeah, fair enough. Totally understand. So hit me with the question anyway.
But we are going to hit you up with a question. So since the U.S. Open's coming up, it's going to be a U.S. Open-centric question. Here we go. Name either golf course on which Gene Sarazen won one of his two U.S. Opens. Without looking it up, no Google machine, name either golf course that Gene Sarazen won one of his two U.S. Opens.
I think one of them was Fresh Meadow.
That is correct. Absolutely right. In 1932, 10 years after his first U.S. Open championship, he did indeed win the Open at Fresh Meadow. Well played, Tony. How did you know that?
That's a good question. I'll be perfectly honest with you, Jay. I had reason to look it up about a week ago. I was writing something about I'm doing a big preview of the US Open for Golf World in the UK, and that just came up in research. But I can't remember the other one. Where did he win his other US Open?
In 1922 at Skokie, his first major championship victory of seven.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember now. Yep. Yes,
and, of course, as you know, he won the second Masters ever played with his famous double eagle at the 15th.
Yes. I wasn't there, but I imagine it was quite a good show.
All right. Well, since we're talking about U.S. Opens, tell us a little bit about what you're writing for Golf World and what your angle is on your piece in preparation for our U.S. Open at Shinnecock.
Well, the first feature is just a story of the club and the course, and it's actually going to be 4,000 words long, so it's going to be quite a lengthy look into the club. I mean, it's got such a interesting path, you know, it's from where it started, the 12-hole course is really done to what it is now, what it became, you know, thanks largely to William Flint. It's an amazing story. And on top of that, I'm also doing a winner's prediction thing, which players will be suited to a talk and those that won't.
All right, Tony, so who are your choices for this year's U.S. Open?
Okay, Jay. I was just thinking about 30 or 40 years ago when publications and journalists used to predict, you know, winners for the Open or the US Open or whatever. Players very definitely were, you know, the phrase horses for courses came up very often. And you could say, well, he doesn't like a links course or he's very comfortable on a links or he's very comfortable on a US Open style course, et cetera, et cetera. These days, you know, the phrase horses for courses comes up far less. Obviously, some people like certain courses more than others. I mean, you know, Tiger Woods' record at Firestone and Bay Hill and
Torrey Pines.
Yeah, Torrey Pines. You know, he obviously has a great affinity for those courses, but, you know, they're different. So horses for courses doesn't work quite as well now as it used to. And the equipment, you know, the equipment these guys play is such a big factor in that. You know, nowadays I use the phrase one shot fits all or one game fits all because it does, to a much lesser extent than was the case 30 or 40 years ago.
Tony, you're beating around the bush. Answer the question. Who are you picking?
Rory McIlroy.
I had Rory as my choice for the Masters, and I'm very surprised that he spit the bit on Sunday. Do you have any reason why? Why was he flat on Sunday?
So much speculation there. I mean, I honestly think that Reed got on his head. I'm not sure Reed did anything specifically to do that. I just think Rory, he was considering, he might have considered the words he said the night before and suddenly realized, you know what, Patrick Reed doesn't have all the pressure. There's a lot of pressure on me. And, it, you know, he wouldn't have specified those words exactly, but I think at some point that it became clear to him that, you know what, that there is an awful lot of pressure on me to win the Grand Slam.
Well, all right, but eschewing the pressure, was there something in his swing you noticed? The putting stroke didn't look good to me at all. He was fanning everything right. But anyway, what this leads me to is that I picked Rory for the Masters, and I will give him a long look at the U.S. Open because, as you were alluding to, we are on a links course, and it's going to play like a links. It's going to be windy. The greens are going to be slower. They're going to try to keep them between 11 and 12. They're not going to try to have them 14 or 15. At least that's what Jeff Hall of the USGA told me in one of my preview pieces for Golf Course Trades. But I'm also giving a long look to a number of European players. Henrik Stenson topping my list.
Yeah, Henrik's a good choice. You said it's a links course, and yes, you know, in many respects, it does play much like a links course. However, I'm sure you've seen the photograph of the area of the course. You know, Corin Crenshaw went in there within the last couple of years, you know, to make some, well, not alterations, but to renovate the course. And the changes that they made aren't really going to be on display because there was a fantastic aerial, very telling aerial of the course. I'm not sure who took it, forgive me. But it showed the mowing lines. You know, the after Corin Crenshaw, the fairways were that bit wider, but this aerial showed very clearly, the US Open mowing lines. And so Shinnecock, and so, you know, it's always like with all the great courses, it's going to be wonderful to be back there. It's going to be great to see Shinnecock Hills. But ultimately, what we're going to get is still a U.S. Open course with 20-yard wide fairways and heavy rough on either side.
I have a bit of news for you. I have two bits of news to drop for you then. I'm very happy to tell you that there are two things that you can correct about that. First of all, that overhead with those mowing lines, those aren't mowing lines. Here's what the USGA did. They went to one side of the fairway that they wanted to narrow, and they ripped up the sod from tee to green. They rolled it up, and they put it on trucks, and they trucked it to a storage facility in New Jersey. A guy I know watched the trucks go over the George Washington Bridge, and what the USGA did was they imported new sod grown with the fescue from their own sod farm in New Jersey and from the short course, and they rolled out this new sod. So they astroturfed every hole. What you are seeing on one side of every fairway has been called by one of my member sources, McRuff. Now, as you know, I have two members of Shinnecock that play in my regular foursome. One wishes to be called Rodney Zilla, not his real name. The other wishes to be called Charlie McRainer, also not his real name. And they have been feeding me pictures, and they've been feeding me updates on a weekly basis on what's being done with Superintendent John Jennings and the USGA. And Charlie McRaynor said, while it will be a great open, it'll look good on TV, he says he hopes Gil Hance has a conniption on air as to what they're doing at Shinnecock.
Well, that's very interesting, and thanks for putting me right on that. So does that mean that the renovations, the wider fairways will be in play?
Well, the fairways that I'm told, Jeff Hall of the USGA said to me, the fairways will start at 30 to 35 yards wide, and in some instances will be upwards of 50 yards wide. He says we're going to look a lot more. The fairways are going to be nice and wide like Chambers Bay, as opposed to what we used to see back in the 80s and 90s, that we're not going to see Shinnecock looking like some narrow tree-lined thing. We're not going to see Shinnecock, 20 yards wide. We're going to see a Shinnecock that will fairly test the greatest players in the world, but at the same time will have the same kind of shot values that William Flynn wanted and the same strategical lines of attack that William Flynn wanted.
Well, that's fantastic. You've roused my excitement for the tournament. Even more. That's wonderful news. It's great to hear.
Will we see you on Long Island come this summer?
Hope springs eternal. I mean, I would like nothing better than to be there. We'll see. I don't know. I can't. I don't have an answer for you, Jay. I hope so. That's the best I can do.
The anticipation on my end is that I will wake up frequently every morning, play the front nine in National, leave my clubs at the halfway house, go cover the tournament, and when I'm done for the day, play the back nine in National in before walking to the condo that one of my playing partners owns there. So hopefully we will not only be reporting live, but we will be reporting live from right smack dab in the middle of everything the entire week. And hopefully Ryan Ballengee will be joining us. But it looks like we're going to have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. It's interesting what they're doing, astroturfing the rough. And then also on top of that, there's something new now that we will see on number 7, which is a collar of fairway height rough, fairway height grass that will be allowed to grow just a little bit longer, so that balls will no longer roll into the bunker on number 7 unless they are actually very poorly hit. They're going to raise the mowing heights around the edges of the bunkers on number 7 so we don't have a repeat of 2004. What are your thoughts on what's been happening at the infamous 7th hole?
Well, it sounds like you know an awful lot more about it than I do. I would say that 2004 was desperately disappointing because, as is the case with a lot of US Opens that go wrong, it seemed that, no matter where you pitched on the green, no matter what trajectory you came into the green on, the ball just wound up in exactly the same place. Every single shot was it didn't matter. It didn't matter the height, the altitude, the trajectory, the line, whatever. Every shot just wound up, eventually curled down into the same low point of the green, which is so boring. It is so boring. So with regard to the collar of rough, I don't know about that. I've always been a big fan of the old Melbourne Sandbelt bunkers eating into the greens. And as long as, the pin isn't ridiculously close to it and makes it too difficult. As long as you have a chance to make a birdie, but also, there's a disaster waiting if you hit a poorly executed or poorly thought out shot. Fair enough. So I don't know about the color of rough. My initial instinct is that I wouldn't have it, but we'll see.
Excellent. Well, I to get us back to the Masters, I don't know if you noticed it, but other people were noticing it and said the same thing, that one of the ways Patrick Reed got very lucky on Sunday was that his ball did not go into Rays Creek on number 13. It got held up by a cut of rough just off the edge of Rays Creek, and that he was able to play. It looked like shades of Freddie Couples on 13 and again on 15, instead of going over the green and having a long pitch back, you know, his ball held up fairly close. He still didn't make a birdie, but he got away with a couple there. I'm not a fan of collars of rough around bunkers. I like to see bunkers be slightly larger than their actual size that balls will go into them. You know, they're supposed to be hazards. You know, golf's not supposed to be a game of easy, as the book title says. But those are just our thoughts. Everybody, give a big warm welcome, and sorry, big warm round of applause for Tony Dear. Terrific appearance on the show. Tony, we'll be looking forward to catching you up before the U.S. Open in June.
I look forward to it, and thanks for having me on, and thanks for putting me right on that Shinnecock turf. That's very interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about as we get closer to the U.S. Open, and I'm going to let you in on another little secret. There's even more to talk about as we get close to the PGA Championship. Everybody, we'll be back with the second half of the show right after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back with the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Place on the Golf News Net Radio Network.